Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. Couple quick things right here at the top. First of all, my guest this week is a doctor on TikTok. He goes by Dr. Eric B. He's asked me to not use his full name. Believe it or not, he actually gets full-blown death threats sometimes from anti-vax people. That's how crazy some of these people are. So he has asked me to just refer to him by his TikTok handle, so I will be using that, Dr. Eric B. Second of all, we had a few minor technical problems while we were recording his portion of the show. We just had some sound issues. They're totally fine. You'll be able to hear everything. It's just sometimes my microphone was going in and out. We had a little bit of issues on his end through the Zoom feed, but we got it all worked out. You can hear everything, but I just wanted to let you know that right up front. And the next is I have a new album out. But at the time that you're listening to this, most likely, well, I guess no. If this drops Thursday morning, then on Friday, August 6th, my new album, my new TikTok album will be out. Friday, August 6th, Bandcamp Friday. Bandcamp waives their fees and gives 100% of sales to the artists. It's a great day to support indie artists. And my album comes out that day. I also have a new single out. It's called New Content. It's out right now. It's on Apple Music and Spotify, streaming everywhere. Also available to purchase on my Bandcamp, austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. Again, Friday, August 6th on Bandcamp, my new TikTok album drops. Very excited for that. And then the other order of business before we begin the show is I just want to take a moment, as I have a few times already now, to just address my lovely Patreon patrons. And if you didn't know, if you're a new listener, we've got a lot of new listeners on this show, and I'm so excited about that. If you didn't know, I'm in sort of like a romantic relationship with my patrons. It's not like physically romantic. It's more emotionally. It's a platonic love relationship. I'm in love with them platonically, but also if I were able to legally marry all of them outside of my parents. My parents are also contributors. But if I could legally marry everyone that wasn't my parents platonically and be with them for the rest of my life, I would do that. And there's always room for more. If you want to support the show, go over to patreon.com/AustinArcher and you can support the show and all the content that I put out on the internet. This is my full-time gig, and the Patreon stream of income really helps make that a possibility. So you can join us, patreon.com/AustinArcher. And to those of you who are already there, thank you so much. Thank you to Clarissa C., J-Gal Funnyface, Erica Guess, Kit Gertge, Sarah French, Amy Frushar, Kelly, Shanae Nadine, Kareth Werty, Kenny Bekek, Holly GNS, sorry, Kenny, if I got your last name wrong, Carly Taylor, Kiana Rowe, Brian Wood, Warren Evans, Michael Scherer, Nikki Aiken, Sebastian Miser, Houston Parks, Dungeon Master Devo, Victoria, Alexis Miskitty, Kat Canner, Emily Susanna, Charlotte Grant, Jennifer, Hillary Burgoon, Hannah White, Kate and Kyle R., Jordan, Sonny Bogdan, Peter Shukoff, Eon Nagy, Carly Hefner, Michael Gatton, Sarah Star Polson, Jen Inchiostro, Garrett Wilkin, Tabula Rasa, Travis Stein, Podcast Enjoyer, Betsy Malisetti, Marley Sage Gable, Mei Chung, Margaret Woodrich, Aaron Daughtry, Jeremy, Kelly Riley, David Bernardi, Tom Robertson, Jody Santillan, Desiree Primavera, Aaron Miera, Samantha Scheller, Claire Walker, Allison Etc., Unspoiled, Lee A. Kelsey, Valerie Sanfilippo, Chris, Nicole Beer, Patty Lynn, Elizabeth Gardner-Wellman, Prophylactics, Wrongtown, Ken McLaughlin, Paula Haubrich, Julie, Matthew Fouts, Michael Tam, Caitlin Hescock, Mateo, Samuel Johnson, Kiba 13, hey Carrie, hey Kiba, Lori Abby, Ali Funtimes, Mike and Julie Archer, Greg Crew, Kelly Elise Tim, Jason Shellen, Scott, King Taylor Project, Kelts, Nina, David Clement, Daniel Telford, Natalie, Sean Mann, and Jessica Flynn. Okay, I mean, our family's getting big. Big family. Thank you all of you so much. Thank you so much for your generosity, and thank you for being part of the producing team of this show and of all the content that I put out. If you want to join us, again, patreon.com/AustinArcher. Love you so much. Here's the show. Tommy Lahren, a well-known conservative talking head, tweeted out what she must have thought was some sort of gotcha, that 25% of COVID cases in California are currently from fully vaccinated people. She seemed to think this was proof that vaccines don't work and that she is justified in spreading misinformation and lies about their safety and effectiveness during a global pandemic that has killed millions. Never mind the obvious fact that simple math undoes her entire flimsy argument, because even if her numbers are correct and 25% of California's current COVID cases are from fully vaccinated people, California is around 70% vaccinated, meaning a whopping 75% of current cases statewide are coming from just 30% of the population, and around 94% of hospitalizations from COVID in California are from that 75% of unvaccinated citizens. Now, I know that's a lot of numbers to keep track of, but the point is, the data is crystal clear. And it's the same anywhere you go, and it's not like this information is hard to come by. So what's the problem? Why is it so hard to get something that seems so obvious and clear through to so many? Is it simply that in the information era, there are too many varying sources to get your information from, and it creates a situation where it's hard to delineate good facts from patently absurd ones? Well, maybe. But historians will tell you that 100 years ago, long before the invention of the internet and search engines, during the last great global pandemic, we had the exact same problem. And I mean the exact same problem. An entirely not insignificant portion of the population refused to wear masks, citing their personal freedoms and their skepticism that the masks were actually effective. They put their masks on their dogs to insult people who wore them. They would cut holes in their masks to smoke cigars through. They said people who wore masks looked like pig-snouted fools. They were known then as mask slackers. As we know, history has not vindicated these people. Around 500 million people died worldwide in that pandemic, and the strain of flu that killed them, H1N1, is still around today. And in real time, history is continuing to not vindicate the mask slackers of today. So maybe it's not about lack of information or clear data. Maybe it's about something deeper and more basic to human nature. Maybe it's just as simple as some people are really, really stupid, and you can't cure stupid. Well, in the internet age, many medical professionals are trying their hardest to do just that. My guest today is a physician who has been working in New York City on the front lines of the pandemic since it began. When he saw the misinformation abounding on the internet about the realities of what was actually going on in hospitals across the world, he did what many medical professionals have done over the last 17 months. He got on TikTok and started making videos trying to calmly and clearly offer easily digestible information straight from the most informed place possible. And he's still doing that, despite the frustration that comes along with trying to convince a horse to drink the life-saving water you just so patiently led it to. From a Blankenfoot recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking with my guest, Dr. Eric B., about his experience working on the front lines of the COVID-19 pandemic. Busy, and that you're trying to you got a demanding job and a busy schedule, and you're trying to not only save people and help people in the hospital and in the ICU, but you've also got to deal with trying to educate people on social media.
Yeah.
And
it's a demanding job.
Which the you know, the first one is something that you do, you know, as a profession and as a very noble pursuit. And the second is something you do almost just more charitably, like trying to make it maybe so that your job is a little less difficult when it actually comes to...
Yeah, that's like the ultimate goal, right, is to try to keep people out of the hospital.
Right. Let's start off here by just sort of introducing you to the audience as who you are, sure, what you do, what are the titles that you hold, and sort of what have you been doing over the last 18 months and as we've been in this global pandemic?
Yeah. So I'm a board certified internist, internal medicine doctor. I work as a hospitalist. So not a lot of people know what that is. It's essentially an internal medicine physician, an internist who just works only in the hospital. So I don't see any patients in a clinic. I just see you if you're, you know, sick enough to be admitted to the hospital. I see you, and I deal with like a broad range of medical conditions. I don't have a specific specialty. It's just internal medicine. So when you get admitted to the hospital, I tell people if you're not getting emergent surgery or you're not giving birth, I'm usually going to be taking care of you if you're admitted to the hospital. I'm a board certified internist. I'm also an assistant professor of clinical medicine at the medical school associated with my academic medical center. And basically I've been on the front lines of this pandemic since the very beginning. You know, I practiced in New York City. So we were the first United States city that was hit by this pandemic. We were hit really hard back in March of 2020. And, you know, essentially I was one of the first doctors seeing COVID patients in my hospital. We tried to sort of cohort them to just one team because at first it was just a handful. And then over the ensuing weeks, that handful blew up to our entire hospital was just full of COVID patients. So, you know, we were sort of grabbing specialists and other doctors and PAs and NPs just to sort of to deal with the surge of patients. So I was on the front lines of that. And, you know, luckily our surge sort of died down in the summer of 2020, then picked up again in the fall and winter of 2020, 2021. And then luckily now it's a little bit better. But yeah, since March of 2020, this has been living, breathing, sweating, coughing, you know, everything's been COVID.
Yeah. So it sounds like you've been busy.
Yeah.
Have you had a recent spike? I mean, you talked about how it's sort of leveled out, but I don't know what New York is like as far as Delta with unvaccinated people. New York City seems like it would be an area where it would have a high vaccination rate. So I don't know if you guys are experiencing those same kind of spikes that we're seeing in places like Missouri or Louisiana or, you know, even...
Yeah, luckily we're not. Luckily, I think, you know, New York was hit so hard in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I feel like New Yorkers really learned their lesson. I see people, they're wearing their masks in the subway, they're wearing their masks in stores, the vaccination rate is, I think we're well over 70% people have received at least one dose in New York City. So as a result, we're not seeing a huge surge of COVID cases in the city, which is reassuring, but it's still distressing as someone who's lived through this to see places like Louisiana, like Florida, like Missouri having these surges and hearing doctors just, you know, going through this, you know, nurses, physician assistants, just going through this whole thing all over again. It's distressing to watch from a distance.
I imagine it is. It's hard for me as a person who wasn't working on the front lines, who just saw video and photos and just heard mm-hmm. people on TikTok talking about it. It's hard to hear that it's happening again and that places are hitting their highest, caseloads in months, and that, you know, 99% of the cases coming through are unvaccinated people. Have you had to deal with, now I know that you certainly are trying to communicate with these people online and in the social media sphere, but have you had to deal with personally patients who were people who didn't believe that masks worked or who thought that the CDC guidelines regarding social distancing and stuff was overblown, or people who are just flat out deniers of the pandemic in general, or people who don't believe in vaccines or all of the above? Have you dealt with that much in person?
Yeah. So luckily, again, being in New York City, that's not a very pervasive thing. You know, every so often you'll have someone come in, whether it be a patient or a family member, who will, you know, doubt the severity of the pandemic, who will doubt the effectiveness of masks and the vaccine. But I feel like just because, you know, in New York City, again, we were hit so hard so early that it's hard to find a person who wasn't personally affected by this pandemic. So for people to say it's not real, it's hard, at least in my area. But again, you always get those patients who roll in and have their doubts and their opinions. And again, you know, as a physician, you have to deal with it with sort of an air of compassion and understanding. You can't be judgmental. You can't be, you know, let your own frustrations out on that person. You have to sort of work with them and try to explain to them the realities of the situation and the realities of their decision. And that's just healthcare in general, right? You know, this is nothing new. You know, we have patients all the time who, you know, don't want to do certain things because they don't think it's necessary, not just with vaccination, with any sort of medical care. And it's all about sort of discussing those risks and benefits with them and trying to see where they're coming from, to understand where they're coming from.
Yeah. And I think something that maybe makes it particularly more acute in this scenario, because a lot of people, the argument that you hear a lot is, hey, what do you care what decisions I make for my healthcare? If I want to argue with my doctor and say, hey, I actually think I'm better off just changing my diet and maybe trying a different route or going with a naturopath or a homeopath or whatever it is, some person that I found that I trust more, what business of yours is that? And typically I feel like my feeling is like, sure, I guess it isn't any of my business and go ahead. But in a situation like this, in a pandemic, it's like, well, unfortunately, it kind of is all of our business because we're all going to be to wind up being affected by not necessarily the health choices of a few people, but if enough people try to decide to band together and kind of come together as a movement, as happened against sort of the advice and guidelines of medical professionals. If enough people do that, then yeah, we are in trouble. And I don't know. So, I mean, in that situation, obviously, like you said, it's a common situation, but in a situation where you're like, yes, but your decision in this case could affect not just you, but everyone else around you. Do you communicate that to those patients or?
Yeah. And I try to do that as much as possible. Not just with patients I encounter in real life, but with people via social media, is that, you know, if this were just your personal risk of coronary artery disease or, you know, fatty liver disease or anything that's just going to affect you, it's okay if that's the decision you make, because it's a decision you're making about your body. Right. Mm-hmm. But with a global pandemic, a pandemic that's caused by an infectious respiratory virus that spread from one person to another, your decision to not wear a mask or your decision not to get vaccinated, unfortunately, doesn't stop with you. It affects those around you. And it doesn't only prolong and protract this pandemic, and it doesn't only affect, you know, your health and the health of those around you, but it also breeds new variants, and it makes this pandemic just, you know, continue over and over again. So I try to impress upon people that it's not just about them. It's a global pandemic. It extends beyond the individual. And unfortunately, I think this pandemic has shown us more than anything that people don't care about one another, right? As much as we sort of say, you know, we're America first, we care about America, but what is America but its citizens that live there? So if you don't care about your neighbors, what are you doing here?
Right. Yeah. I mean, we're seeing that today with the hearings on the insurrection and stuff. It's interesting, the people whose political persuasion is America first and me before you and pull yourself up by your bootstraps. These people 7 months ago tried to overthrow the government in a violent insurrection that is now trying to sweep under the rug and say that it was just a handful of idiots. And, you know, they were basically just tourists that got out of control it is fascinating. I think that's a really interesting take, that it's like, if you are a patriot, if you are a person who cares about your country, you care about its citizenry. And it seems like the idea of caring about the country is like, well, I care about me in the country that I'm in. I care about me and my ability to do what I want to do in the country, in whatever country I'm in. Yeah, that's fascinating. So obviously those people are out there and they are hard to convince of anything. Mm-hmm. It's hard to figure out the right language to use sometimes to educate, as I'm sure you found online. I try to metaphor out because everyone kept saying, well, you know, you're a bunch of sheep jumping off this cliff with these masks and vaccines, mm-hmm. just doing what you're told. And I said, it's actually the opposite. It's actually you're being warned that there's a cliff and people are saying, hey, please step away from that cliff. And you're saying, don't tell me what to do, and jumping off the cliff.
Yeah.
And saying, who are you to tell me not to jump? The problem is we're all tied together and you're going to pull, if enough of you jump off, you're going to pull us down with you. And all these people in my comments just said, just in that video said, What do you care what I do? What do you care? Why do you care if I get a vet? And I'm like, I'm trying to tell you that your choices in this situation affect me. And so then you try to explain about how variants, and that if enough people don't get vaccinated, it will give the virus time to mutate and create variant strains and things like that. And God, I wish TikTok comments could be longer because it's so hard.
Same.
It's so hard to respond to people in 134 characters, as I'm sure that you've run into. Do you have now? We know about the people out there, and who knows where they're getting their information from. But what's interesting is when I encounter these people and I say, "Hey, just trust the medical professionals, trust the epidemiologists and doctors." And people who are experts in virology, that they know more about this than you do. Just trust that. And people will go, well, I've talked to doctors that validate my feelings. Do you have colleagues or have you encountered people in your field that distrust the CDC or that are skeptical of vaccines?
Yeah. And again, I feel like I live in my little liberal bubble in New York City. I know this isn't the case for everything, but you know, all the doctors in the group that I work with and I'm friends with, all obviously trust the science behind vaccines. We trust the guidance that's coming out with regard to sort of with masking and with social distancing, throughout this pandemic. And we understand that, the scientific method is by no means perfect and it's very fluid and adaptable. And that, this is a new novel respiratory virus. We haven't seen a pandemic like this in over 100 years. So obviously things were going to change. Recommendations were going to evolve the more that we learn. So, people will often say, oh, well, Fauci said masks don't work. He said that. He didn't say masks don't work, but he said that not everyone needs to wear a mask back in February of 2020. It's now, almost August of 2021. Obviously things have changed and he's been pretty consistent with his mask narrative, his mask message since that time when we realized, okay, this is how this virus spreads. We learn more about it. But I do see doctors, a lot of doctors on social media spreading misinformation about this pandemic. And it's really disheartening. And what I find is that people, confirmation bias is a real thing. They will seek out anybody, any medical professional who agrees with their point of view. And that's it. And they live in these echo chambers where all they'll do is just bounce these ideas off of one another and say, yeah, well, this doctor said this, so it must be true. But then that gives them this false sense of security, this false idea that so many doctors agree with them when it's just this very, very small fringe group of doctors. Just like any profession, there's going to be a fringe group of those professionals who are just really out there and saying really bonkers things that the rest of us, the vast majority of us in the profession, are like, wow, that's not right. That is so counterfactual to the actual evidence. But because they're just surrounding themselves with people who agree with them, they think that this group of physicians, this group of healthcare professionals who agree with them is much larger than it actually is. So it's hard then to come up with that when I say, hey, as a doctor, you're wrong. They say, well, this doctor agrees with me. So who do I believe? And it's hard for me to say, well, you should trust me when they have their own sort of expert, especially because this has been so entrenched in politics as well, that it's been nearly impossible to divorce politics from this. So every time I try to say something, it's always, oh, well, you're a sheep. You're a liberal sheep. You're just going by what Dr. Fauci says, and Dr. Fauci is a shill. And it's hard because then if I try to get into the politics of it, they lambast me for being political and biased and partisan when I am just trying to speak to the science. So it's really frustrating.
But yeah, I went on it's interesting. I went on a camping trip recently with a few friends, and one of my friends is, at least I thought he was conservative, and he's a family doctor. And I just asked him, I think he knows my position just because I'm pretty public online with it. But I just asked him, I said, hey, so what do you think about all this? What's your experience been? And what do you think about masks and vaccines and stuff? And he was like, what do you mean? And I was like, just do you have like an opinion that did? And he goes, no, it's just the science is obvious. He's like, I tell people all the time, like, do you want a surgeon the next time you're in surgery to not wear a mask when you're mm-hmm. you have an open chest cavity? Do you want them just breathing and coughing into your open chest cavity? Like, if you don't believe masks are effective, then why do you accept that for the entirety of your life, anytime you've been to yeah. the dentist or getting any kind of procedure done, there's been a mask there to protect you. And you, yep. you've known this, and then somehow out of the blue, everyone suddenly feels like it's this silliness, this like, oh, give me a break. A little piece of cloth is going to stop, droplets, you know, people spraying spray bottles through the mask and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, yeah,
it's like they haven't seen an actual human sneeze before. It's just like they dump buckets of water through a mask. Obviously, you know, if that's how you sneeze, you've got bigger problems than COVID.
Yeah, exactly. And what do you think about this narrative? This isn't something I put in the outline, but I've been seeing this too. These doctors, these professionals who are spreading misinformation, it seems like, and again, I do think it's important, and you did say this, that they are the minority. They really are. They mm-hmm. are a small faction of medical professionals in all actuality. It's not just because you live in a liberal bubble that all of your colleagues agree with medical science. I think that
yeah.
most medical professionals in most places agree with the very clear medical science yeah. that we have gathered on this, knowing that the process isn't perfect, but just trusting where we're at and trusting that this is, to the best of our knowledge, what is true. But it keeps coming up that the people who are the loudest with the misinformation, who are in the quote unquote medical community, just basically a person with a degree or with some kind of board certification, mm-hmm. who knows which board they were certified by. Rand Paul likes to say he's board certified. He's board certified from a board that he created. It's like yeah. you know, who knows where the credentials come from. But these people, If you dig hard enough, they're usually selling something. They're usually selling some yeah. kind of alternative medicine, some kind of multi-level marketing thing. And what do you think about that? The whole idea that the entire anti-vax movement and community is really just a shell for people to push multi-level marketing products.
It is. I find it so ironic. People often tell me, like, I'm a big shill for big pharma, that I'm like in Pfizer's pocket, when the anti-vax movement, like you said, as a multi-level marketing scheme. Like if you click on the profile of one of these medical professionals, like you said, they're selling supplements, they're selling, you know, books on how to detox your body from toxins and all this stuff. And I just made a video about Dr. Scott Jensen. He's actually running for governor in Minnesota. And he is a huge proponent of this sort of anti-vax movement and spreading lies. He had his license investigated by the state medical board last year because he kept saying that doctors were falsifying death reports to make money off of COVID, which is an absolute falsehood and very dangerous. And then that misinformation spread. Just die. Can you still hear me?
I can.
Oh, okay. Hang on 1 second. I think they're still good. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, he spreads this misinformation, and I've actually heard people, once they heard him talk about this, like, oh, doctors are falsifying death reports for profit. That's a pervasive conspiracy that I still contend with. And it comes from him, and they say, well, this doctor says it's true. And if you look into it, his whole political platform, his gubernatorial run is based upon spreading COVID misinformation. So it's really, really hard to have to deal with that kind of stuff again, because, you know, it's easy if I can easily sort of just say, hey, you know, this Joe Blow from down the corner who doesn't know anything about medicine spreading misinformation, that's really easy to debunk. But if it's another person with a medical degree, again, then that those people say they use that argument from authority. Well, this person's a doctor, they must be right. Like, what says they're right and you're wrong, and vice versa. So, and then, like, I don't know who to believe. So they just believe the people who go with their narrative. So it's hard, and it's really disappointing, because again, there's like the misinformation dozen or the disinformation dozen that, like, are a bunch of sort of doctors, anti-vaxxers who just, you know, spread this misinformation. They're responsible for like over three quarters of the misinformation online. And it's just, you know, again, they're, you look into it, they're always selling something or trying to profit or make a name for themselves. So
which is just so despicable and low. It's just like, oh geez, it's real. And it really comes down to that, that it's just these people who are trying to sell something and they're totally cool with just lying. I mean, just that whole narrative that, that doctors and hospitals were, misreporting COVID deaths, or that they were like taking someone who died in a car accident and saying it was COVID because which is just, you can't do that. The person who fills out that report, it has to go through a series of checks and balances. That person would get fired. Like, you cannot do that.
I never in a million years thought before this pandemic that I would have to explain like how I bill as a physician in a hospital, the layers of checks and balances, like you said, that go from me putting in a diagnosis in a chart to actually that being billed to a patient's insurance company. It's the most boring part of my job. But for some reason, people have just glommed onto this and said, oh, well, you're falsifying COVID deaths. I can't do that. If I put on a death certificate, a death that I can't justify based upon my medical record, the patient's medical record, I will get fired. And you don't make money off of death. Like, that's the thing. Is another thing I had to come at. Like, if a patient dies, that's when the hospital stops making money. You can't bill someone who's dead. You can't bill for medical procedures or diseases because the patient is no longer living. So we don't get a sack of money every time a patient dies, right? We bill based upon medical diagnoses, right? COVID is a medical diagnosis we could bill for. Diabetes, hypertension, heart disease. But if someone dies, that's it. We're not going to bill off of their dead body. We can't do it. So again, trying these things that are, again, no one cared about before the pandemic. Not a single person ever asked me, how does a death certificate work? But as soon as the pandemic came out and then this misinformation started seeping into the American consciousness, then all of a sudden everyone's an expert. And this is how, oh, you know, people are dying with COVID, not from COVID. You know, oh, because they had diabetes, they didn't die from COVID. It's just laughable. It's just really nonsense.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because the lay person might not know how filling out a death certificate works. And they might see, say they get their hands on some records somehow that someone has leaked, and they look and they go, this person had a bunch of compounding issues and they said it was COVID so they could run up the death toll and they could inflate the numbers. The lay person doesn't really know how that works, and they don't really understand that it's like, I think you've even had videos that I've seen where you've been like, here's how that works. Here's how compounding illnesses work. And here's how like comorbidities work. And here's how, I think I've seen that from you where you're like, people seem to be misunderstanding what comorbidities are and how they work. But a doctor would understand that. A doctor should conceivably understand that. So when these people, when these medical professionals are pushing that narrative that they're lying on death certificates, there's no other rational explanation other than they're just lying, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Because they know. They know. And that's what's disappointing, because you know, the average person doesn't know. So part of me, even though I'm upset with like the spread of misinformation, a very small part of me is like, you know what? They don't know any better because they're not doctors. They're not medical professionals. But when medical professionals come out and say this, I'm like, you do know better. You know how a death certificate works. You learned what how a comorbidity affects us. You know that the chain of events that leads from infection to death, how that works. You know you're being disingenuous. You know you're lying you're telling the story for, you have some ulterior motive. And other people don't know that. But they don't know that you're lying to them, which is the really disappointing part.
Yeah. Disappointing is an understatement. It almost seems criminal.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like criminal negligence and like you have blood directly on your hands in many instances. And it's not just them. It's politicians and people who, you know, it really feels like if we had just had consistent messaging from leadership from the get-go. And I'm sure as you do too, I get so tired with the politicization of things that don't seem at all political. Fact that it is it's somehow a liberal position to give a shit about the COVID death toll and to like be compassionate about the families that have lost loved ones. Like somehow that's a liberal position. And that doesn't seem, people always talk about how my page is very political and my content's very political. I'm like, to me, it's not politics. It's It's humanity. It's just part of being a person in society. So frustrating, that politicization. Let me ask you, when did you first start making content on TikTok? Were you doing it before the pandemic, or did the pandemic sort of spurn that?
Yeah, so the pandemic did spur it. My friends had been on TikTok for a while before I was, and I was like, you know, this is a stupid app. I'm like, this is just like for kids. I don't want to do it. And then you know, the pandemic happened, and it was probably around June of last year when the pandemic was just starting to ease up a little bit in New York. I remember going from like active COVID units where the patients were, you know, actively sick to sort of these post-COVID units where the patients who didn't die, who were just recovering, I remember taking care of them and all of their sort of chronic illnesses that they received from their prolonged hospitalization with COVID. And I just remember being really depressed. I remember just, you know, it was just during the height of the pandemic, I was like in a constant go mode. I couldn't relax. I couldn't just sort of reflect upon the gravity of the situation, because I literally was on. I would go into the hospital, work my 12-hour shift, come home, sleep, go back, do it again. And it just kept coming. And then when it finally started to ease up, that's when the reality set in. And I was like, holy shit, this happened, right? I never in a million years thought as a physician I would have to deal with this, especially, you know, in the United States of America, for all of our, you know, grandiosity and excess, that this happened in the United States. And then I was like, I need a distraction. And then like my friend's like, download TikTok. It's dumb. You'll just like take your mind off of like the depressing nature of your job right now. And I downloaded it. And like for the first day, it was fun. I was like, oh, this is funny. People are doing dances. There's cute animals. This is fun. And then I started seeing, a lot of misinformation about the pandemic. Just people saying, you know, masks are dumb, masks don't work, the pandemic is a hoax. And I was like, wow. And it was, I saw like these things were going viral. And yeah. I was like, this is just wrong. And I was like, I should say something. I'm like, I had no intention to make any videos. I was gonna be a lurker on TikTok, that was it. But I was like, you know what? Let me make a video about masks and just talk about how masks work. And I did it and I uploaded it. And the first comment I got was like some like troll calling me, you know, an idiot and that COVID was a hoax. I'm like, you know, I'm gonna delete it. So I deleted the video and then I posted it to Instagram and it got some traction from Instagram. And my friends were like, yeah, this is really good. You should post this. So I posted it on TikTok and I left it alone. I turned my phone off for the night and I woke up and the next morning it had like 12,000 views. And I was like, wow. And then it just kept going. And then by the end of the day, it had like 100,000 views. And I was like, wow, I think this is a good way to get this message out. So I tried to like, you know, just, you know, put out some more things. And then I realized that it started to pick up steam. And where it really picked up steam was when Donald Trump had COVID. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to use this opportunity to like talk about COVID more. Because now it's like, it's always been in like the public eye, but now it's in the, you know, it's, you know, the president of the United States of America has it. So I was giving like Trump COVID updates and I was making it apolitical. I was like not expressing my political opinion. Like these are the medications Trump is on. This is, you know, these are the, you know, this is what he's doing. This is what's happening. And those videos all went viral. And then I got a lot of following from that. And it just really took off after that. And I said, I'm going to use this as my opportunity to try to spread information, to combat misinformation about COVID, because it's directly affecting my life as a physician. Because, you know, patients come in and say, yeah, I heard this on the internet, or I heard this from a friend. And then right after that, the vaccine started rolling out and there was more misinformation. So again, it just like sort of snowballed on itself.
Well, and I mean, TikTok is built to maximize discoverability and to give people a chance to grow. Mm-hmm. And I think when you've got a good message and you've got and you're really clear about the way that you say it, you have a higher chance of being able to capitalize off of whatever your first video is that goes big and keep it rolling. And you've been doing well out there in keeping your message consistent and clear and not combative. You seem very information-based, even though sometimes, obviously, you're understandably maybe frustrated at times, mm-hmm. or frustrated that you're repeating yourself again, yet again, on something that you feel like maybe you've already said before, but here we are again, having to make this same video again. I wonder if there are any methods that you've found. I wonder if you've had any success. Have you had anyone who's come to your comment section or come to you and said, you know what, this was very helpful. I had a concern about this specific thing and this helped. Or have you found any methods that work better than others?
Yeah. So I find that the videos where my frustration comes through and maybe I'm a little sassier, they tend to do better. I think just people find it more entertaining. But I don't feel like I reach many people. I'm preaching to the choir with that one. Sure. I have my rant videos where I'm just like, hey, this is frustrating.
Yeah.
But what I find is that, if I sort of just try to take a neutral approach, and respond to, I try to avoid now responding to specific comments because it seems like I'm targeting that one person. But what I'll do is I'll try to just curate, because most of the comments are the same, right? I feel like the people who are spreading misinformation, they're not original people, right? They parrot back the same like five conspiracies just recycled over and over again. So I try to like curate those.
They seem like bot accounts because it's the same language. Yeah. It's the same syntax. It's the same rhythm. Like it's wild. Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. So I find that, you know, trying to take a neutral approach helps, giving facts. And again, those videos don't particularly go viral because me talking about the latest data from this new scientific article and going through it step by step is kind of boring. A lot of people don't like when people like to talk, like, oh yeah, I do my research. But when I actually go through the research, people snooze and they just turn off. They don't want to hear it. But what I do is I find like, you know, I try to like deconstruct a common conspiracy. Like this is a conspiracy. Like recently people are misquoting a paper from the New England Journal about pregnancy and the vaccines. And they're just sort of cherry picking this data to make it look like miscarriage rates are so high in vaccinated people, which is just not true. So I basically go through that paper and I say, this is the chart that they talk about. And these are the numbers that they cherry picked out, but this is the entire paper. And this is how you actually have to read it. And I go through that to sort of maybe increase a little bit of the health literacy of the viewers. And people do appreciate that. But I find that, and I'm trying now to sort of avoid using inflammatory terms like anti-vaxxer and things like that, because I understand, and I've understood from the very, very beginning, that there's sort of two groups of people. There's, you know, the hardcore anti-vaxxers that are nothing I say is ever going to penetrate because they've made up their minds. They have their biases and they're not budging.
Sure.
But there's also the legitimate people who are vaccine hesitant, right? You know, they have legitimate concerns. You know, they've been sort of burned by the healthcare system before. They have doubts and they just want information. And unfortunately, the misinformation out there is just so loud and just so pervasive and just so easy to digest. Because you could say like, you know, oh, the vaccine's going to, you know, make you abort your baby. Ugh. And then if I try to explain the, you know, because they said the spike protein is going to attack your baby. And if I try to go through the science of how that's not possible, even if I try to make it as simple as possible, it's still a lot more complex than the boiled down misinformation, right? So if you're scared and worried, that's just going to, you're going to just cling to something that can give you an easy explanation, an easy out. And I try to make that distinction because sometimes people are like, why are you calling me an anti-vaxxer? I've gotten every vaccine I've ever gotten. I'm just scared of this one. And when you call me an anti-vaxxer, it makes me not want to get the vaccine even more. So I try to make those distinctions. But again, when my page is inundated with trolls and just like really mean-spirited comments and just very flat out misinformation, it's hard not to just like say, this is just an anti-vax statement. But I find that if I try to be a little more neutral, a little more factual, that gets through to people a little bit more than I had to turn my DMs off because I was getting like threatening messages. But before then, I would get the occasional person to say, hey, thanks. You really did change my mind by giving me like just sort of like a neutral, like not mentioning politics, not mentioning anti-vaxxers, just saying these are the facts. And also encouraging people to talk to their own doctor too, because I don't give medical advice on TikTok. So I say, listen, these are the facts as they stand. If you have concerns, please talk to a medical professional. Don't seek counsel in a Facebook meme or, you know, the anti-vax Facebook mom group that, you know, shares misinformation. Talk to an actual medical professional if you're concerned. And I feel like people respond to that.
Yeah. I mean, even now you're doing a much better job of being restrained than I ever can. I mean, in my comments that you're like, there's a lot of people who are trolls and a lot of people who are just misinformed. And I would just call them morons. There's just a lot of just fucking idiots who I'm just like, wow, I can't believe you're that stupid. But even I think that's a fantastic. I'm just meaner than you are. I need to work on that. By the way, I'm taking notes as you're saying all of this stuff about try not to use the inflammatory language and try to keep it neutral. I really like what you just said about how the misinformation is more digestible than the good information. And that is part of the problem when people are asking me to explain myself or asking me to like go through the facts with them. And I'm like, well, first of all, I'm not who you should be asking. Like random guy on the internet, this is the problem, is that you want a very lay explanation from a lay person. You don't want to talk to a medical professional because even if they try their best to explain it to you, it's most likely going to go over your head. The other day I watched a video that was explaining what the Higgs boson is. And I was like sitting there watching this video and it was made in a way, it was like a cartoon and it was made to try to dumb it down so that it could be very digestible, maybe even for kids to watch. And I was just like, I'm never going to understand this no matter how hard people study their entire lives or years and years and years to understand this. Why do I think I'm going to get it from a 5-minute cartoon on YouTube?
Yeah.
And they're trying very hard to boil it down and explain what the Higgs field is and how field energization creates a burst, and that burst is the particle that we're talking about. And I was like, I don't get what you're talking about. But I feel like that's what's happening when you're like, well, I'm going to try to explain to you why the spike protein does this instead of what you've been told. But it's going to be hard for me to use language that won't require you to at least have like a cursory knowledge on how a lot of this works from the outset. And, that is a problem of like how to more or less, dumb it down and make it more digestible. Cause people, again, like we talked about the length of TikTok comment sections, they ask a question that you're like, I can't really answer that question in 134 characters comprehensively. And also like, I'm not sure that even if I took the time that you would like appreciate it. And then, just today, someone asked me and it seemed like they were being earnest. They said, I'm nervous about this vaccine. I Googled it and it didn't help me. The things I found on Google didn't help quell my fears. Can you tell me anything that would help me feel less nervous? And I was like, honestly, I'm not going to tell you anything that Google wouldn't tell you. And I don't know why you would want me, a person. And I was like, I appreciated that they were being earnest and they were saying, help me to be less afraid. But I was like, you shouldn't trust me more than you should trust the vast majority of medical professionals. My microphone did it again. I don't know what is going on today with this thing. Okay, it's back on. I said, you shouldn't trust me more than you would trust the vast majority of medical professionals and the science that has been collected and the data that's been collected on it. If you Google it and you're looking up and you're looking at reputable sources, those are going to tell you way more than I ever could. And if you just on the outset don't trust the medical community and just don't trust those people, then I don't really know how I'm going to help you, because my opinion is based on trusting people who are smarter than me, is based on trusting people who know more about this than I do. You know what I mean? But a lot of people are looking for someone who feels more relatable to give them an easily digestible reason to trust.
And it's hard too, because when I sort of confidently explain this, I get so many comments that say, oh, you're so arrogant, you're dismissive, you're a know-it-all. And, oh, you think you know more about this? Your opinion means more than my opinion. And quite frankly, it does. Like, I'm sorry. And I again, like, people misconstrue when I say I know more about medicine than you. As a physician, I know more about medicine than you, a non-physician. That does not mean that I am a better person than you. I think people get that mixed up and say, oh, you think you're better than me. No, I just think that I'm better at medicine than you are because you're not a doctor. I went through years of schooling and training to get to this point, and I still every day learn and have to take continuing medical education credits and board exams and everything to stay up to date and to stay current. So you know, I think, again, and it's also the science literacy in this country is low. And it's hard to be able to distinguish good information on the internet about the vaccines and about the pandemic from bad ones. Like you go to some of these websites and they look pretty, but they are full of drivel, and you can't tell the drivel from the non-drivel if you're not trained to be able to identify that. They use fancy words. They use like things like inoxide and you know, lipo nanoparticles, and that sounds very scientific, but it's literally like verbal diarrhea spilled out onto a page. And anyone with a medical training or scientific training reading that says this is just a bunch of nonsense. But people read that and they say, oh my God, this is a scientist that's saying this, so it must be true. And because it confirms their already pre-existing bias about the vaccines, they don't seek anything else. They've got that information. They say, I know a scientist who said this, and that's it. And when I, as another, you know, point of view, try to express the other side of it, I'm coming off as arrogant, egotistical, mean, and then again, because of the politics of it all, I'm you know, political. And I try to tell people, like, listen, you know, one of the major things is hydroxychloroquine. I've been talking about hydroxychloroquine more than I've ever thought I'd ever have to.
Yeah.
And, you know, they, cause again, it's sort of an alternative to the vaccine, right? I'm not prescribing it because I don't want to, you know, I'm making too much money off the vaccine, which is nonsense. I make no money off the vaccine.
Yeah.
And I used hydroxychloroquine in the beginning of this pandemic. That's all we had was hydroxychloroquine. I used a ton of it in my hospital, and guess what? We studied it. My hospital, we did a cohort study looking at hydroxychloroquine. Did it prevent severe illness? Did it prevent death from COVID? It didn't. And that was validated. And when I try, and then the most common comment I get is like, oh, you don't do hydroxychloroquine, you don't prescribe it because Donald Trump said it worked and you want to make him look bad. And what I say to that is, okay, let's look at this rationally. Donald Trump said that he took hydroxychloroquine as a prophylaxis. He had a little news conference where he said, I'm taking it. It's great. You should take it. Guess what? He got COVID. But despite that, whether or not he was actually taking it, I don't know. He's not the most trustful guy, but let's say he was, he got COVID despite that. And he got really sick. Lot sicker than we actually thought he was. He was very sick. And his doctors literally listed the medications he was on in the hospital. Guess who was absent from that list? Hydroxychloroquine. So I try to tell people, like, if he, Donald Trump, who at the time was the most important person in the world, right? He was the president of the United States. Whether or not you agreed with his politics, he was the president of the United States. So he would have gotten everything and anything that would work or could have worked or in a snowball's chance in hell of working to combat COVID-19. They would have given it to him, and they did. They didn't give him that. They didn't give him ivermectin. What they gave him was Regeneron, the antibody cocktail. They gave him dexamethasone. They gave him remdesivir. Those are the medications we're using because those are the medications that have evidence and data behind them. But again, they don't want to hear that because when I start talking about that, it just doesn't fit with their little picture that hydroxychloroquine works. Because they have a handful of papers, really shitty papers that say, hey, hydroxychloroquine works. And they say, well, these say that you're wrong. And I said, but have you actually read them? And 99% of the time, no one's read those papers. They read the headline that said it works, and that's it.
Yeah. And if they did read the papers, they wouldn't be able to really read them in a way.
They couldn't critically analyze it.
Right. Yeah. They wouldn't have a frame of reference or a context to really truly understand what's being said. Mm-hmm. What do you know so far about Delta?
Yeah, so the Delta is a variant. It's a mutated version of COVID, of SARS-CoV-2, and it is just very, very, very infectious. It's much more transmissible than the Alpha variant, which is the so-called UK variant, and much, much more transmissible than the wild type or the original, the OG COVID that was you know, here last spring and last winter. And it's just ravaging our country right now. It took a matter of weeks to months for it to become the dominant strain in the United States. That's insane, right? In early spring, we had the Alpha variant, right? That was our dominant strain. Delta made its way in here, and now it is the dominant strain. It is what is causing the surges in cases and hospitalizations throughout these pockets of low vaccinated parts of the country. Like you look at, you know, like you said, Missouri, like if you look at Florida's COVID case, like, you know, Florida's full of theme parks. Their COVID numbers like look like a roller coaster. It's like up, shooting up like a rocket. So,
yeah.
And this is driven primarily by Delta.
Wow. That's terrifying. and just upsetting. And it's kind of exactly what was predicted that was going to happen if we didn't get you know, up to a certain percentage of vaccinations, that the virus was going to still continue to be transmitted. The more that it was transmitted, the more that it would mutate and create new variants, and that's what's happening. Mm-hmm. How about this this news that came out of Israel? Have you heard about this, that they that with the effectiveness of the Pfizer vaccine at preventing infection, mm-hmm. that it's like down to like 39% or something? Is this news – I feel like this news is going to be something that people in the anti-vax community or the vaccine skeptical community – or, you know, vaccine – what is it? Apprehensive community, vaccine anxious community, that they're going to look at as validation. Could you say from a medical perspective, like, how we should read that?
Yeah. So I think that's a really good point of actually having to like actually look through all the data and understand it, because people read the headline, like if Israel data shows Pfizer 38% effective against Delta variant, and that's it. That's all someone will read and that's it. But if you look into it, the actual data is not that concerning. Because you actually look at that, and what they do is they break it down into any COVID infection, which is asymptomatic or symptomatic, and then they have symptomatic COVID infections and severe COVID infections. And what they do is they look at the data from people who were vaccinated in January, vaccinated in February, March, and April. And the people who were vaccinated, and then they pool all those numbers together. So just COVID infections in general, they found that those who were vaccinated in January, their effectiveness started to wane. They had like maybe like, you know, a very low percentage that had protection. But if you think about who was vaccinated that early in the pandemic or that early in their vaccination campaign, it was the elderly, it was the immunocompromised, it was the sick people who we know may not respond that well and may not have a durable immunity to the vaccine. And then as you go through the months, those numbers increase. But when you average them all together, you get 38%. That's any illness. So asymptomatic or symptomatic. When you look at the severe illness, the one that lands you in the hospital, no matter when someone was vaccinated, greater than 90% effective at preventing severe COVID, no matter when you were vaccinated against Delta variant, at preventing severe illness, it's going to land you in the hospital and kill you. So that's what we care about right now. We knew breakthrough infections were going to occur. And I try to tell this to people because they look at breakthrough infections as if the vaccine is ineffective. It either has to be 100% effective or it's garbage. And I tell people mitigation strategies to reduce risk are never 100% effective. Condoms, birth control pills, seatbelts, airbags, sunblock, parachutes, everything used to reduce our risk are never 100% effective. So is it because if you get into a car accident, you know, someone who got into a car accident and died and they're wearing a seatbelt, is that proof to you that you're never going to wear a seatbelt? Because why should you? It doesn't work. No. And the vaccines are the same way. And we know now that the variants are, especially the Delta variant, much more transmissible and leading to more breakthrough infections than we knew when we studied these vaccines against the original variant and against the Alpha variant. So they're going to be more breakthrough cases. But like you mentioned earlier, the vast majority of people, 99% of the people who are dying in this country of COVID are unvaccinated. Greater than 96% of the hospitalizations are due to COVID are in unvaccinated people. So the data speak for themselves. Even if people are getting a mild, you know, getting a breakthrough infection of COVID, they're mild. They're at home. They may feel like, you know, not the best, but the vast majority of them will do well. They'll have a mild respiratory illness. They'll get over it in a few days. They won't go to the hospital. They won't die. We're reading stories now of it's tragic of people who are filling up the hospitals in certain unvaccinated areas or low vaccinated areas who didn't get the vaccine because they fell prey to this misinformation, and they're begging doctors as they're about to get intubated to give them the vaccine. And unfortunately, it's too late at that point. And a lot of people, we say, okay, yeah, well, they had it coming. You know, they're anti-vaxxers, they want it. But as a physician, that hurts me because again, they're still a human being. Despite our disagreements on vaccines, and you know, they might have been someone who was in my comment section calling me a shill and making fun of me and sending me death threats, but they're still a human being who is now sick, scared, and dying, right? And they might have just fallen prey to this misinformation because they didn't know any better. And the pandemic in the spring of 2020 was hard. It was the hardest thing that I've ever had to go through as a doctor. But now watch, and I thought I was never going to feel that gut-wrenching angst again. But watching these numbers rise again, I'm feeling it. And it's that much more painful knowing that it's preventable. In last year, we couldn't do anything, right? We're like, these people are coming in. They did everything they could, right? They wore masks. They tried to social distance. They got COVID anyway. But now there's a vaccine that could prevent this, right? 96% of these hospitalizations don't have to be happening. 99% of these deaths don't have to be happening, but they are. And it's unfortunate because people are listening to the wrong people. They're getting the wrong information. They're making life and death decisions based upon misinformation. And you can't have an informed decision. You can't make an informed decision on misinformation. But unfortunately, so many people are, and we're seeing the devastating consequences as a result of that.
Oh, geez. It's so sad and frustrating. And also, it's kind of like the climate crisis or one of these things where it's like, what are our chances of fighting this when half the population is convinced that it's either not happening or that we're being lied to about it? In your opinion, I mean, what are the chances of eliminating a virus like this that's mutating and that's already creating new strains that are more that going to be more resilient against vaccines and inoculation?
It's going to be hard. I think it's COVID is never, in my opinion, and take it with a grain of salt, I don't think it's ever going to be eradicated. Our hope is that it will become a manageable disease. It'll be an influenza-like illness that we hope will be seasonal. And we'll have a vaccine that we need annually, you know, every few years, just once. We're still learning. But I think what it's going to take, unfortunately, is that we're going to have to see more people die, right? We're going to have to see more of the unvaccinated get sick and die, and their family members realize, okay, this is real. It may take more kids dying, unfortunately. And I hate to say that, but people say, oh, it's a disease of the elderly. It's a disease of the chronically ill. And that's just the ableist and ageist nonsense that I've heard from the beginning of this pandemic, that it doesn't affect young, otherwise healthy people. So why should I care? It's starting to affect young, otherwise healthy people. The average age of COVID hospitalized patients is coming down. In certain pockets, it's people in their late 20s, 30s, 40s are getting sick now. So I think that may turn people around. I think when they finally get full FDA approval, that's another thing I hear from people. Oh, these aren't FDA approved. I'm not taking it. When over-the-counter medication and vitamin supplement that, you know, Dr. Mercola is hawking on his website, not FDA approved, but people guzzle that like it's water. But I think we'll be getting FDA approval on these vaccines soon enough. Hopefully that will sway some people. I don't think it'll sway the anti-vaxxers. They'll just move the goalpost. But I think it's just going to take this disease causing more devastation, and people are going to have to be more personally affected by it. And then, you know, as more time passes and more people are vaccinated, maybe more people will realize that these vaccines are not going to kill them, and COVID will. And I think, unfortunately, we're going to have to just go through more suffering and strife in order to take this seriously. I thought that, you know, last year was enough. 600,000 plus dead Americans, thousands more than that, sick and chronically ill as a result, 4 million people dead worldwide, an economy that's been torn to shreds. Thought that would be enough, but unfortunately, it's not.
Yeah, I literally just did an episode on this podcast called What's It Gonna Take? And it was about how much pain is gonna be necessary. And because it is mind-blowing that that's not enough. It's mind-blowing that it hasn't been enough yet. And I think you're right, that it's just going to apparently need to be more. But even then, sometimes you see these cases where, like, someone, like a guy reached out to me on Instagram recently, and he said that, he goes, my mom and her boyfriend are big anti-vax people, and her boyfriend just died of COVID, and she hasn't changed her opinion. Yeah. And I'm just like, wow, I mean, what can you do about that when people are that dug in? The last thing I want to ask you, and thank you again so much for being here. It's been a fantastic conversation and very enlightening. Is there anything in your opinion, like if you want to throw like a bone to some of these people who feel, or maybe people who you might feel justifiably skeptical of the medical community, is there anything that you feel like the medical community should have or could have done or should be doing going forward that could be more useful in engendering trust between the community and I don't know. Because to me, I'm like,
I think you're, you know, you're hitting on a really good point, because, you know, there's just in general, there's just been mistrust in the medical community. It's been before the pandemic, and, you know, we see this on a day-to-day basis. And I think this needs to be a community driven initiative, right? I think it needs to be boots on the ground, you know, doctors just, you know, recognizing their own implicit biases, recognizing these issues that are pervasive in medicine, and tackling them hands-on, and having these conversations, developing trust. Because I realize every time I go into a room, I don't take for granted my patient's trust. I have to earn my patient's trust.
I don't just say, okay, yeah, you're going to trust me because I'm a doctor and you're a patient. I need to gain their trust. I need to prove to them that I'm a trustworthy person. So I think we need to like start that from the ground up, because, you know, and unfortunately, you know, despite our best efforts, it's hard. And I think, you know, unfortunately this pandemic became political right out the gate. And it was, once that happened, you know, it's hard, because I try to be apolitical, but when you talk about masking and that's all of a sudden in the mind of half the country, that's a liberal thing to wear a mask. Me being an objective physician, just saying masks are to prevent you from spreading illness to other people and to protect you. When they associate that with liberalism, that my argument's out the window. I can be as objective as I want. If I'm giving a talking point that they view as partisan, it's hard. So it crushed me when this started to become political right away. And I saw this coming and I'm like, this is bad news, because our public health measures, public health message is now looking political when it shouldn't be. It should have been the very beginning. We are an American people. We are not red states or blue states. This pandemic doesn't care if you're a Democrat, doesn't care if you're a Republican. It doesn't respect state boundaries. It doesn't respect congressional districts. It's going to affect you. It's going to affect Americans. And like I said, America is nothing without her citizenry, right? That's who makes America great, right? Are the people who live here. That's who makes America great. So that's the message I would have said. Like, you know, let's make America great by taking care of one another. Wear your mask, social distance. We're gonna work together to get you the funding that you need to weather this storm, because that's what Americans do. And this isn't a novel concept. We did this during World War II. Right? We did this during other times of strife in this country. We came together after 9/11, for God's sake. Everyone was like, we love New York, New York strong. Like we will never forget. This happens and it's all for one for all. No one cares about, you know, about the individual, the collective rather. They care about themselves and any petty minor inconvenience that they have to endure for the sake of other people is too much to bear. And I think that's where we took a left turn and we just couldn't get back from that.
What's so fascinating is that it probably could have saved the Trump presidency if they had just had some unifying leadership.
He would have 100% won. I have no doubt in my mind, if he handled this just a little bit better and just took the initiative, a lot of people who just did not like how he handled this pandemic would have voted for him. And
seriously,
Biden wouldn't have had a leg to stand on and he would have won.
Seriously, I agree with that as well, that this is the kind of thing that, boy, if you can manage to lead, and it's not hard, it's literally just like, oh, all we got to do is just have a clear, concise, unifying message and just be, don't try to play for points, don't try to see if we can game this in any way, just let's get out with the minimal amount of casualties and band together to make it through this thing as one, do what we got to do to help each other out. And if that was the message, and if that's the way that the leadership had handled it, God, I might have voted for him. I mean, I wouldn't have, but I might.
Yeah, no, but I could have seen him, because like everyone loves a wartime president, right?
Yeah.
And if he just stood up there with his mask and said, we are America, we are going to get through this, this is going to make America great again, that would have engendered this sense of unity. Right. Not division. But he just fumbled it time after. And after he got COVID, I said, you know what? Here we go. He is going to take this seriously now. He stood up on that portico and took off his mask and went back into the White House, actively infected with COVID. I damn near ripped my hair out. And I was like, and then he gave that speech where he said, I beat it. It's nothing. You'll get over it, too. I was like, this is it. This is that nothing is going to convince this man. Nothing is going to convince this administration to take this seriously. We're on our own. And that's how it went.
Yep.
So.
Yep. That just sounds so frustrating. And it was frustrating as a citizen, and I can't imagine how frustrating it was, as a medical professional and as a physician. Thank you again for your time. I really, really appreciate it. This was a fantastic conversation and just full of a lot of really, really great stuff. And thank you so much for everything that you've been doing for us out there over the last 18 months. Thanks for literally putting your life on the line to help people every single day. From the bottom of my
pleasure. What I trained to do and what I love to do.
Well, really, really appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. And it means a lot that you're out there, not only at your job, but that you're also trying to inform people in your free time. So Appreciate what you're doing.
All right. Thanks so much. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to chat about it.
Of course. Have a good one. We'll talk to you later.
All right. You too.
Bye-bye. All right. Man, I love having smart guests on the show. I feel like I always have guests who are smart about what they want to talk about and who it's fun to talk to people who are smarter than me, but it's really great to have a guest on who, like, every one of my questions, he's just got the best answer for. And it was fantastic to talk to him. If you don't already follow Dr. Eric B on TikTok, you really got to do that. For some fantastic information. It's Dr. Dr. period, Eric, E-R-I-C, period, B. Dr. Eric B, he offers some really fantastic information about what's going on with COVID and the virus and how it works, how vaccines work. And he does a really great job of sort of dispelling misinformation, even though he still gets inundated, of course, with anti-vaxxers and anti-maskers in his comments. Hey, we're on TikTok. Speaking of TikTok, we're here. We're live. You know how we do it. Live every Sunday at 2 p.m. Pacific time. And we're here for the TikTok, the TikTok. And let's see what everyone has to say about what's going on in the pandemic. Travis Leftfish says, I'm in North Carolina and it's crazy. Like, masks have never really been enforced. My parents are in the medical, I'm assuming... the medical industry. I mean, I just got back from Utah, I was shooting some stuff there, and it's kind of the same there. It's like, they're done. As a state, they're done. And of course, they're seeing spikes in cases and all this stuff. It's not going to change anything. It's like, once you gave these, especially red states like North Carolina, once we gave them a little bit of time to be like, I think we can ease up on the, once the CDC said, I think we can ease up on masks, it was over. It was over. And who knows if we'll be able to get people to get back into it. Twin Dad Nerd says, I think full pandemic reset soon. Yeah, I mean, right? It feels like it. Will we be able to, though? It was hard enough the first time to try to wrangle in all of these people. It's going to be hard. Will we be able to get them a second time? Shetox Film says, what's the most compelling evidence that we should still wear masks after vaccination? Just the fact that you can still contract the virus. Now, a lot of anti-vaxxers and just people who are just basic deniers will say that this is conceding that vaccinations aren't actually effective. The argument goes, and this is, again, maybe I'm talking about a radical extremist faction of people, but the argument goes, if the vaccine is so effective, then why are you afraid? Why do you care? Why do you have to wear a mask? If it's so effective, then you should be fine, right? Well, it is mostly effective at preventing you from contracting the virus. Now, we just found out, this information came out of Israel, that said that it turns out that the Pfizer vaccine is about 39% effective at preventing contraction. So now, again, anti-vaxxers will jump on that, will see the headline and jump on that and go, this is proof that vaccines don't work. Ha-ha, we gotcha. It's still, your chances of being able to weather the storm of getting the virus if you've been vaccinated are exponentially higher. You will most likely not be hospitalized and not be seriously sick if you have been vaccinated. Someone else just said in the comments, Mary Kender said, you can contract and spread Delta. Yes, you can if you've been vaccinated. But so A, you will be better off. You will be safer if you've been vaccinated and you contract the virus. You will have less severe side effects. But B, you don't want to spread it to someone else who maybe isn't vaccinated because they couldn't get vaccinated, or who is immunocompromised, or who is older. You don't want to spread it. You don't want to continue and contribute to the spread of it. So that's why you should still wear a mask. Even if you've been vaccinated, you can contract it. Your chances of contracting it are lower, but you still want to make sure that you're doing everything you can to make sure that you don't become a carrier and that you don't inadvertently spread it to someone who maybe hasn't been vaccinated due to misinformation, or who hasn't been vaccinated because they aren't capable of getting vaccinated for one reason or another. You want to make sure you're doing what you can to, as much as possible, slow the spread. And I know that everyone just wants it to be like, I got the shot, I'm done, I'm not wearing a mask anymore. Unfortunately, that's not really where we're at right now with the pandemic. Angie D20 says, my daughter is a fence sitter, nursing with, hold on. Oh, nurse. Nurse with concerns for diabetes and child reproduction in future. So I find this interesting too. Now, first of all, I would say talk to a medical professional and you could go, but my daughter is a nurse. She is a medical professional. Okay. You know, I'd say, you know, maybe talk to someone. If those are her concerns, it sounds like she maybe doesn't know as much about this as she maybe could. I will try to put this lightly. But it's very interesting, all of these concerns that are coming out, that I'm afraid that in the future I won't be, it'll affect my children or my, and I'm like, there's no data on this. The people who are saying, oh, in 2 to 3 years, you're going to see, there's going to be these side effects that are going to emerge in 2 to 3 years, and all these people are going to die from the vaccine. It's like, where in the world could you possibly get that data from if it hasn't even happened yet? So there's, it's impossible for us to have that data. It's impossible because everyone's saying this is a thing that's going to happen in the future, a thing that has not happened, they are claiming will happen. Based on what? Everyone that I can find, every source that I can find and talk to and look at, every epidemiologist, every doctor says no. They've been developing this for several decades. It's safe. It's effective. How could you possibly have data that suggests that something's going to happen in 3 years that has not ever happened before and has not happened yet, but it's going to, and we know it because we know it. I understand being afraid because you've heard people saying that, but where are the people who said that you heard getting this information from? I think that there's some critical thinking that needs to take place here with a situation like that. Also, I will say any medical questions directed at me during this talkback, I should have said this at the top, like my big answer to a lot of people is you shouldn't be taking my word for it. And I say this to people in my comments all the time. They'll be like, well, what makes you so qualified? And I'm like, exactly. No, you shouldn't. You shouldn't be looking for a stranger on the internet to convince you. You should be listening to medical professionals and epidemiologists. And the overwhelming majority of medical professionals, don't cherry pick the medical professionals that are selling multi-level marketing, products to you that want to inspire you to be afraid of vaccines so that they can sell you their product. Don't cherry pick the absolute minority of amoral people who are just trying to make money. Look at the overwhelming majority of the global medical community and what they are saying. Don't listen to me. Don't take my word for it. Oh, this is very sad. Epona, I have a daughter who is trach and on a ventilator, and she is only 4. I've been fighting so hard. That is just horrible. I'm so sorry to hear that. And again, there's one of the, a very popular narrative is, yeah, nice try. This thing that only affects people over 75. I think I'm going to take my chances. And I've got a 99% chance of recovering. I think I'll be just fine. It's the most callous and like heartless and response, A, to just suggest that everyone over 70 or 75, their life doesn't matter. To just suggest like, who cares? But then also like to ignore all of the young people and able-bodied people who have become extremely ill or who have died, and just sort of write them off as sort of anomalies or something. It's so astonishingly callous, and it makes it, those people are the people that I'm like, I don't think I'm going to convince those people of anything. And so I do get frustrated with those people, and I do kind of mock those people. And maybe that is counterproductive, but I'm so frustrated at their lack of humanity. I'm so sorry that's happening. Yeah, Lioness Pride says the Delta variant is attacking a lot of young people. Yes, it is. It's more contagious. It's quickly become, as you'll hear in this episode, if you listen to this episode this week, my guest, Dr. Eric B., talks about how it has quickly become the dominant variant and dominant strain in America. Warrior Princess says, fear-mongering amongst people that barely passed high school science is easy. My guest talks about this in the episode, and it's such a fantastic point. He talks about how it's so much easier to sell a flashy headline than it is to explain to someone how an mRNA vaccine works. And that is part of the problem when you're trying to argue in the TikTok comment sections with people and trying to explain to them how, you know, what the herd immunity threshold is or all of these things, trying to explain all of the ingredients in an mRNA vaccine and what goes into it and why and how they all work and everything like that. It's so much, literally people studied their entire lives and on this. There are people, researchers who spent their entire careers developing this and devoted their entire life to knowing how this stuff works. And you're going to try to boil that down into something digestible in 134 characters in a comment section for a person who is running with a flashy headline. They just saw some kind of stat thrown out on a headline that worked to confirm their pre-existing bias or pre-existing fear. And it's so much easier for them to run with a simple narrative than it is to try to learn the complexities. I haven't learned the complexities of what goes into everything. I'm not a doctor. I didn't go to medical school for all the time that it takes. I haven't spent extensive time studying viruses. There are people who have. Medical Mal says, I'm in Nebraska Medical Center, best hospital in Omaha. All caps, COVID unit is full again. Yeah, we're just seeing it from everybody. Especially in red states and especially, you know, but we're just seeing it everywhere. Just medical professionals who worked on the front lines when the pandemic first happened. And they're all coming to us saying, we're back at it. We're right back where we started. It's very upsetting. And I wish you the best and thank you for what you're doing. And thank you for being out there helping us, and putting your life on the line to save other people's lives. People who maybe have been very careless and who have been unwilling to wear a mask or social distance and now have been unwilling to get vaccinated. Thank you for being at work, putting your health on the line to save them. Appreciate that. Yeah, this is good. Warrior Princess says, exactly. You trust acetaminophen to help with pain. You don't have to know exactly how it works. Someone did that. Yeah. There's all kinds of things. There's all kinds of modern technology that you don't know how it works and you just sort of go with it. All kinds of stuff. You have no idea what the long-term effects are. That's so many people go, we don't know what the long-term effects are. You're right. We actually don't. We don't really know what's going to happen in 5 to 10 years to everyone who got vaccinated. Really. But just because that's the case, it doesn't mean we should assume that all of those people are going to die. Best case is to run with the data, and the data is showing that the vaccinations are effective at keeping people out of the hospital and at slowing a contraction rate, an infection rate, and that they've been developed carefully over a lot of years, and that to the best of our knowledge, they're safe. You don't know. You don't know that you're not getting cancer from Wi-Fi. You don't know. You don't know that you're not, like, that Wi-Fi's been around for 15 years? 15 years? We've been shooting these electrical signals around. We've been, like, flying through the air, all this information, flying through the air, going through. You don't know that that's not developing tumors. You don't know how it works. You don't even know what the hell Wi-Fi is. You just know you're pissed when it goes down and when it's running slow. You know, we could just say that Wi-Fi is for sure going to give everyone a brain tumor in 20 years and call anyone who doesn't believe us sheep. I love this. This is actually, so yeah, I love this. And my guest today said this too. Job Hawk Null says, the vaccines teach your body how to fight. All the vaccine is out of your body in 3 months. It is a tiny, teeny, tiny amount of a solution that goes into your body. And these people are acting like it's going to somehow form into something in 3 or 4 years that's going to kill you. And it literally is doing what all vaccines do. It's teaching your body how to fight the virus that it's trying to prevent. And my guest more or less said the same thing. He said, if there are going to be any adverse effects from a vaccine, you will see them in the first few days, first few weeks. They will be a parent. And if it doesn't happen in the first few days, first few weeks, it's not going to happen, more or less. Just kind of like any other vaccine. Yeah, I like this. Elise Obese says, I'd take my chances with the long-term effects with the vaccine over long-term effects with COVID. And she puts long-term effects in quotes. And I like that because we don't actually know what the long-term effects are with the vaccine. We know what the long-term effects are turning out to be with COVID. And people downplay this all the time. Like, oh, it's fine. I don't need my taste or my smell. Just two of my five senses that I get to experience consciousness with. I don't need them. That's fine with me. As long as I don't have to wear a mask, I'm fine with never smelling or tasting anything ever again. And having difficulty breathing for the rest of my life. I'm cool with that. As long as I'm not being a sheep. What I wouldn't want to do is do something just because people told me to. I definitely wouldn't want to do that. I'd rather have effects from COVID for the rest of my life than do something because I was pressured into it by a bunch of liberals on the internet. Kitty Whipped 4 says, people talk about the survival rate of COVID, but don't mention some survivors need lung transplants. They don't mention anything. They love talking about the survival rate of COVID. They love that they can make it a percentage, and they always lie about the percentage. They always say that it's 99%. It's not. It's about like 97 or 98%, which like, go ahead and say that. Like, say 97 or 98. Like, why do you need to lie and fudge the number by one to make it sound more palatable or make it sound more digestible? But they love using the percentage instead of the numbers. They don't want to say over 4 million people worldwide have died. That sounds bad. But 1% of people who were hospitalized died, or 1% of people who got it died, that's a lot more. That sounds better. I got a 99% of surviving. And then they don't want to talk about anything that happens to the 99% of quote-unquote survivors, which we still don't actually have data on because we don't know what the long-term ramifications are going to be. We know that there are many long-term ramifications. And we know that they're undoubtedly going to have effects on these people's health long-term down the road. But they don't ever want to talk about that. Yeah, see, O-Town 1986 is in here doing it right now. Under the age of 60, less than 1% of people die. As though that should fucking matter. As though that's like a stat that we should all go, oh, well, I guess no big deal. I guess, you know what? If it's only people over 60 dying, that's just my parents and a massive portion of humanity. I mean, they've lived a good life. Like, who cares, right? I don't need to do anything. I'm not over 60. I sure hope that when I'm over 60, there's not a pandemic and people younger than me don't say, oh, we're cool with you dying because only 1% of us are dying. Jesus, like the lack of object permanence, you know, the fact that you can't even see that, like, this might happen to you someday. You might need younger people someday to come through for you and do something to save your life. But you're like, not right now. I'm good right now. I'm just chilling. See this? I'm not the right guy for the job. Dr. Eric B. is the right guy for the job. I'm not the right guy for the job. Because I can't keep my cool. Because I'm not a doctor. And I haven't even... He has more reason to be frustrated than I do. He's on the front lines watching people die. Watching people come in who are stubborn, who won't listen to him about the clear evidence and clear data that he's been firsthand collecting and sharing with his colleagues. And learning from his colleagues, and he manages to keep his cool and try to just share information. But I have a hard time with it. Cause I see something like that, someone saying only 1% of people under 60 dies, and I can't believe that that's what works for you. I can't believe that a number like that works for you. I can't believe it. Can't believe that you're that's what you're willing to run with. Is I'm most likely gonna be cool, so who cares? Seal Baby says hospitals are running out of sedating meds needed for ventilators. People walking mid-vent and getting PTSD, or people waking mid-vent, I think you're saying. Yeah, people waking mid-vent and getting PTSD. Yeah, there's that. And then there's also, like, have you seen these images of people? They don't have rooms for people, so there's people on oxygen tanks in their cars outside of hospitals. Right now. Right now, that's happening. And we're just, you know, most of the red states are just done with masks. I'm glad that in California we're back to wearing masks. I'm glad that that's a norm again. California, like, wasn't wearing masks for like maybe 2 weeks, and now we're back on it, you know? This is good too. It's simple. I'm Lisa just said, a mask is, and then in all caps, no big deal. And it's not. I think that's the most frustrating and upsetting thing. Is that it's just not a big deal. So let's say that you don't want to get a vaccine. Let's say that you're convinced. So this will be my appeal to fence sitters, to people who feel like they're a reasonable, rational person, who just feels like they have some reasonable concerns. This will be my best effort at calmly appealing to you. Okay. Don't get the shot. You're afraid of needles, you're afraid of side effects, whatever. Don't get the shot. But please, for the love of God, do not leave your house without a mask on. Do not leave your house without a bottle of hand sanitizer on you at all times. Don't touch anybody. Don't come within 10 feet of anyone if you can help it. And don't go to crowded areas. And these things are not that hard. We all just did it. We all just did it. We've been doing it. Masks really are not a big deal. The problem is the overlap of the people who don't want a vaccine are also the people who don't want to wear a mask, who don't want to socially distance, who want to go to big parties and mix and mingle, who want to get up in your business at the store. So if you're one of those people, those reasonable people, who just feels like you have some justified concerns about vaccines, okay, wear a mask. I'm going to wrap up the podcast. I appreciate the comments. To those of you struggling out there, to those of you who have kids or family members who are struggling with the virus, stay strong. I'm so sorry this is happening. To our healthcare workers, thank you for everything that you do. And once again, thank you to my guest, Dr. Eric. He was fantastic. And go follow him on TikTok. Dr. Eric B. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com. I just released a new single. I have a new single out. It's on Apple Music and Spotify. You can find it by looking up Austin Archer on Apple Music and Spotify. Check out my new single. It's called New Content. Very excited about it. I've got an album coming out this weekend on Bandcamp. It's going to be exclusively on Bandcamp. It's volume 2 of my TikTok hits. Very excited about it. All my music is mixed and mastered by Chris Bjorn over at Marmalade Music. He also mixes and masters this show. He's the best. Go to themarmalademusic.com and tell Chris that you heard his work on this show and you want to use him for your next audio project. And guess what? If you mention this show, People Pleaser with Austin Archer, he's going to give you 20% off your first project. So go to themarmalademusic.com, tell Chris that I sent you. You want to work with him, 20% off your first project. Can't beat that deal. Okay, stay safe out there. Get your vaccine if you haven't already. If you really don't want to get one, please wear a mask. If you are vaccinated, wear a mask, please, in public. Delta variant is for real. Take it seriously. Do what you can to try to calmly and rationally explain this to your friends and family out there. Maybe you can do better than I did, and maybe you can be more like Dr. Eric B. Thanks for being here. I love you. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.